So before I get started, just a reminder to subscribe to the Morin Academy on Patreon. I'll put the link in the show notes below. We've got three levels, so there's something for everybody. In the top two levels, you get either the recordings of all of our content, all of our recorded content. Just a quick reminder to follow us on Patreon. Subscribe to the Morin Academy at one of three levels. Just a quick reminder that we have a free newsletter that you can sign up for, and I'll put that link in the show notes below. And the Morin Academy has a Patreon. If you'd like to receive our regular feed, or if you'd like to receive all of our recorded content, or if you'd like to have access to all of our live content, there's a level for everybody. I will put the link to our Patreon below. We're trying to start up a little bit of a small school, but we won't lie to you and tell you that you can get a job from what we teach. Instead, hopefully you'll just understand the world a little bit better. All right, so back into the Platonic dialogue, Gorgias, which has to do with democratic rhetoric. What is rhetoric? Well, it's basically speech making. And where we're at in the dialogue, Socrates is talking to Gorgias for a bit, because Gorgias is a rhetorician and he likes to put on public displays of how he can do public speaking so that he can hopefully sell what he knows to students to make money. And Gorgias has gotten to the point in questioning where he has very generously decided to give a complete account or definition of what rhetoric means to him. And we talked about this last time, but basically it boils down to rhetoric is the architectonic power. And what I mean by that is that Gorgias sees it as a skill that can control all other skills, that you don't need to have the skill of the lawyer or the doctor or the physical trainer or the you know, technician of this or that kind, because you've got the power of rhetoric, and that's the political power, and it's political power that basically shapes economic activity and shapes human behavior down to the last detail and moves around resources and applies those resources wherever the rhetorician or the politician wants them to go. And furthermore, Gorgias says that rhetoric is for persuading the majority for the interests of the speaker. So he comes right out and says, well, I'm not teaching public speaking so that my students can go out and use their rhetoric in order to persuade the citizenry to take care of each other's needs or to, you know, stop fighting meaningless wars or whatever it may be, but rather I'm teaching my students to use rhetoric for what it's good for, which is to get what they want, namely, again, that power to control everything else. I mean, the promise of power and riches is the ultimate allure for learning how to do public speaking effectively. All right. So we find at this point in the dialogue, and these numbers on the screen, they're Stephanus numbers, they're universal numbering system that you can use with just about any copy of a Platonic dialogue to find the place where I'm talking about. So we find at this point in the dialogue that there's this partial agreement between Socrates and, in this case, Gorgias, and it's about what rhetoric is. They agree, okay, on the basic definition. And he says, that is, Gorgias says, near number 455, then the rhetorician too does not instruct courts. No, sorry, back up. So we find this agreement here near number 455, where Gorgias says, evidently, Socrates, that type of knowledge which issues in belief. So we find on, so we find near number 455 that they agree that rhetoric issues in belief. It makes people believe. It doesn't make people know things. It makes people believe things. So they both agree there's a distinction to be made between knowledge and opinion or belief. And rhetoric cannot, claim to cause knowledge, but it definitely can cause a sense of conviction. So Socrates says, then rhetoric apparently is a creator of convictions that are persuasive, but not instructive about right and wrong. And Gorgias agrees. He says, yes. And Socrates says, then the rhetorician too does not instruct courts and other assemblies about right or wrong, but is able only to persuade them, for surely he could not instruct so large a gathering in a short time about matters that are so important. And Gorgias says, no, indeed. So there we see that they agree that the rhetorician is instructing assemblies not about justice, not about right and wrong, because that would require a lengthy argument that would have to involve some actual reasoning, right? And evidence and so on. But it is for persuasion or making beliefs and convictions, and that this is particularly useful in a large gathering, because in a large gathering, you've got such a great variety of people, and the rhetorician tends to speak to the average or even the lower, right? The lowest common denominator, so that he can communicate with almost everybody there. And that definitely means not using any sort of technical language or, you know, being too precise, because he knows that he's going to lose people, not just because many of them can't follow a complete argument all the way through because their minds are untrained, but also just because of attention span. You know, they talk about how there's only so long people will concentrate, right, on an argument, especially if they're in a large crowd. Now, this discussion of what rhetoric is really for and about, that it's really for the benefit of the speaker, it's really about kind of manipulating people in their emotions and convictions to agree with the speaker, it just raises the deeper issue that runs throughout the rest of this dialogue, which is, do you really want to go for that? Is that the best way of life, right? Now, the sort of pious immediate response is, well, no, of course not. You know, like, who would want to manipulate others? But they don't go there. They don't do that kind of sermonizing on any side of this dialogue, which is very refreshing. Instead, they really like hash it out. They really argue it out with people taking up the side of the life of power and wealth is superior and trying pretty hard to prove that that is the case. And using some reasoning in the process, maybe not enough ultimately, but they make some decent arguments. So, you know, this should be a focal point for anybody reading Gorgias, is it's not just about democratic rhetoric, but it's about what way of life one should pursue. Should it mainly be power and wealth, in which so that you can sort of be on top of the social heap while you're alive, which is all that matters? Or should it be the pursuit of a deeper knowledge and justice, which may cut against your own self-interest? And that's a tough sale, let's say. It's difficult to ask people to do that. And of course, the people involved in this dialogue are going to be asking, well, like, why should we do that? And it's a decent question. So we see that Gorgias does like wholeheartedly support the answer that it's power and wealth that people want, and that is the only really smart thing to pursue. But, and this is where it gets interesting again, okay? Socrates raises the issue that sometimes people are harmed by democratic rhetoric, either individuals or whole peoples. You know, for instance, during the Peloponnesian War, when the Athenians were persuaded to fight two wars at once, one against Sparta and one against the Syracusans. That eventually led to them losing both wars. But they were persuaded by Alcibiades, a very, very popular and talented orator, that they could do it all. So this is a case where that oratory or rhetoric led to extreme harm, generational harm, one could say, to the Athenians. But there are a lot of lesser examples of this as well. So the question that Socrates raises is, should orators, public speakers, be held responsible for the harm that they ultimately do when they advise people to do things that backfire or are bad for them? And should their teachers be blamed? Socrates raises the ugly, rude question of, should teachers be blamed when the speech does people harm? Okay. And so there's the implication that indeed Gorgias is through his students doing harm, and that he can't escape responsibility if he chooses to teach rhetoric, selling it on the basis that they too can gain all their dreams come true if they just learn how to manipulate people well enough. So near number 456, Gorgias expounds on the power of rhetoric. And he says, for instance, I've often, along with my brother and with other physicians, visited one of their patients who refused to drink his medicine or submit to the surgeon's knife or cautery. And when the doctor was unable to persuade them, I did so, but by no other art but rhetoric. So he tries to claim there that, you know, here's a good use of rhetoric. But then he goes on and says, and I claim too that if a rhetorician and a doctor visited any city that you like to name, and they had to contend in an argument before the assembly or any other gathering as to which of the two should be chosen as a doctor, the doctor would be nowhere, but the man who could speak would be chosen if he so wished. So there we find, this is the type of example that Socrates would say, it's an example of injustice, okay? It's one thing for a rhetorician to, persuade a person to take his medicine, determined by a doctor. But it's another thing for a rhetorician to persuade the people that he's in a better position than a doctor to give them advice on public health, for instance, okay? And so, you know, Gorgias is basically saying here, this is, you know, look at this. It's an amazing power. Hold on. And Socrates is saying, yeah, it is. And it's a very dangerous power, and it causes injustice because people elect then choose for their advice people who don't have their best interests at heart. Okay. So Gorgias ends up saying that the teacher should not be blamed. Okay. So he wants to have, you know, it seems like he kind of wants to have things both ways. He wants to be able to say that he can teach people to do anything they want. His students will come out knowing how to get whatever they want, even over and against somebody who knows a lot more than they do about whatever it is they're talking about and doing things about. But the fact that he taught them the skills and the values to do so should not make him blameworthy, because they are individuals. They are free individuals. Here you get a hint of the kind of the liberal reasoning. You know, like the, one of the things that comes out when you read enough Plato is that Plato at various points anticipates even liberal theory in little nuggets and little gems like this. So here we have Gorgias saying, no, you know, they're individuals, they have free will. They can take or leave whatever advice I give. If they want to use rhetoric only for other people's good, they can do so. If they want to use it for their own good and harm people, they can do so. But if they choose the latter, that's their choice. And I didn't do it, so I shouldn't be blamed. And he goes so far as to say, if a man is physically sound and has attended the wrestling school and has become a good boxer and he strikes his father or mother or any other of his kins or friends, we must not for this reason detest or banish from our cities the physical trainers or drill instructors, because they imparted this instruction for just employment against enemies or wrongdoers in self-defense and not aggression. Now, his analogy there breaks down, okay? Because here he's, you know, talking about, say, a Taekwondo instructor who's teaching their students how to use this martial art to defend themselves, which is a just reason for learning such a martial art. But if the Taekwondo instructor was like Gorgias, he'd be saying, you need to learn how to do Taekwondo so that if you want to, you can rob a convenience store, or you can beat up, you know, your wife's like lover or whatever it is that you want to do. Yet, you know, like if you choose to do that, don't blame me. All right. Now, if Taekwondo instructors were going around telling our young people who tend to frequent these types of, you know, activities that they should use or could use the skill to beat up their friends and enemies, Well, I think a lot of parents would be pretty disturbed by that. Okay. So this is the kind of thing that Gorgias is doing. He's kind of wriggling around, hoping that he can escape blame by making analogies that are not quite, they don't quite fit. And Socrates obviously disagrees. He thinks that they should be blamed. I guess I would argue that in our current system, this happens all the time, that the people who are elected are more likely to be lawyers and business people. They're not likely to be experts in particular fields. Now, you could argue that lawyers are experts in justice, but they aren't actually trained in our system to think first and foremost about justice necessarily, but of the justice system, which is supposed to render justice if both sides take their sides and defend them as strongly as possible. And many lawyers, of course, aren't even involved in the criminal justice system and are trained in other areas of the law. Lawyers don't necessarily know all the things needful to be able to assess the various problems that we have in our society today, economic problems, environmental problems, political problems, military and security problems, and on, okay? You could say the same thing about business people. But of course, we have a strong bent against the expert, especially in American society, I would say, a sort of anti-intellectual and anti-expert bent that is probably based in our democratic past, the ideological democratic origins of this are probably somewhere in the French Revolutionary period, or, you know, the birth of liberalism or something like that. And, you know, it's the same sort of anti-expert or anti-intellectualism that you see emerging, or it's kind of like the anti-intellectualism or anti-expert mentality that emerged sometimes in totalitarian communism, you know, for instance, Mao said it's better to be read than expert or something like that, and went after the experts as being dangerous for democracy. And, you know, I mean, the kernel of truth there is that which Socrates is defending, is that the expert has this inherent moral authority based on the knowledge that they have. Now, in our time, a complicating factor is capitalism. Capitalism has co-opted and like sullied the trajectory of so many intellectuals, so many experts, that it is less of a wonder why people don't necessarily trust them, including scientists and doctors. When you think about how entangled, how many of these experts are with the profit-making, you know, aspects of capitalism, well, I mean, how would you judge their objectivity? It's more difficult. Now you have to be like in the business of reading peer-reviewed articles in order to decide, you know, whether you can trust the expert. So this is not a great state of affairs, and it makes things even more complicated, definitely more complicated than they were back in Socrates' day, even though they were pretty darn complicated then. Well, at this point, Polus has been listening, okay, to the exchange between Socrates and Gorgias, and has caught on to the implication that Socrates thinks that Gorgias is an unjust man, because he's teaching people that it's okay to be self-interested and to use rhetoric to manipulate people. And Polus doesn't like that implication. Gorgias is his teacher and his mentor, and he doesn't want him to be insulted. And he doesn't want to be associated with publicly with this idea that rhetoric is somehow morally suspect. And so Polus says, "What, Socrates? Is what you are saying your true opinion about rhetoric? Or do you imagine just because Gorgias was ashamed not to admit that the rhetorician will know the just also and the honorable and the good? And that if any man came to him without this knowledge, he himself would instruct him. And then as a result, I suppose, of this admission, a contradiction arose in the argument, which is just what you love. And you yourself steer the argument in that direction. Why, who do you think will deny that he himself knows the right and will teach it to others? But it is the height of bad taste to lead discussions into such channels." Well, Polus demonstrates that he's learned from Gorgias pretty well here, because he is kind of trying to shame Socrates into shutting up. He is defending the integrity of Gorgias as if no one should ever question it, and that you're more wrong for questioning it than Gorgias is for deviating from the, you know, common notions of justice. He says that Socrates is exhibiting bad taste, so he's trying to apply social pressure there. And he's also claiming that Gorgias would actually teach people justice if they didn't already know it. So he's also implying that, hey, you're insulting most people because you're saying that most people don't know what justice is and they need to be instructed. But Gorgias knows that most people already know what justice is and don't need instruction, and he doesn't want to insult them. However, if somebody came to him and asked for that instruction or conversation, well, of course he would talk about justice because he knows it. All right, now, all of that, I mean, pretty good response from Polus given what he's been taught. And all of that leads to this question, which is whether people like Gorgias should consider justice first and public speaking and power second. And if they did so, if they put their mind to justice and became convinced as to what justice is and what the good is, that they might not even feel right about practicing rhetoric the way they do. And this is why they want to deny that you can even know what justice is. We find thinkers like Gorgias and Callicles too will basically say, yeah, I know what justice is, but they never give you any content. Or in the case of Callicles, he says, what is justice? You know, he sort of pulls a Pilate move, you know, and says, what is justice? It's whatever, in his view, it's whatever the powerful says it is. So in his view, it's whatever the powerful say it is. And so it's basically nothing other than an opinion too. So people like that do this kind of maneuver and take justice off the table. They say, we don't really need to know that, talk about it. Power is all important. Justice tails power. The powerful decide what justice is and use it cynically. So that's what we're going to get into next. Pretty soon, we'll talk a little bit more with Polis, but pretty soon we'll be talking to Callicles. And that dude is like a whole different level. So hopefully you'll look forward to that.